Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
What up? Get you pumped. Welcome.
Happy Thursday.
It's Cannabis Hour, y'all. We're here to talk about cannabis stocks. Are you excited, Javi?
Are we?
I hear Javier Hase hates cannabis.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Just kidding. You have one of the coolest.
Wait, I used a Borat joke in relation to cannabis. Mr. Sasha, Mr. Cohen, please do not sue me.
Oh, nope. I like how you used Mr. twice in that, by the way. Javier.
Mr. Baron Cohen.
I like that. So, guys, welcome to Thursday. If you're excited to talk about cannabis stocks, drop a one in the chat. I'm here with the ever fearless and leader of our cannabis editorial staff. It is Javier Hase, the man with a plan, with the great hair. He does all of his wonderful writing all week long for us. Honestly, Javi, shout out to you, bud. I have a routine. That's true. The whole editorial team, including Maureen, Helena, Nina, all of them. I hope that's 2-1, Donkey Limit. Also, hi, Donkey Limit. I feel like it's been a bit. But I do want to say, I totally forget what I was going to say, but it's going to be great about you. Editorial staff is awesome. I have a routine. Found it. Listening. I have a routine every cannabis hour that I look at news, I look at the stocks, I look at a bunch of different places. And today, nothing was comparative to the information that Javier had on Benzinga.com/cannabis. Nobody had the breadth of cannabis information, articles, updates on earnings. It's all there, Benzinga.com/cannabis.
What caught your eye? I mean, since you're
so
talking,
the cannabis earnings page. I love the information that you have there because, guys, you want to talk about somebody who tells it what it is. It's Javier. He's as truly editorial as it comes in this industry. He doesn't, you know, blow smoke up people's butts all day long. You know, he tells it like it is, and he's there for you guys. Anyway.
Benzinga.com/cannabis/earnings.
Yeah, I honestly love this page. And I have some news that I want to get to. We'll let you start with the news.
No, you go. I want to hear what you're excited about today.
Okay. You know what? I'm excited for Entourage, formerly WeedMD. I was looking through this earnings report that I was just talking to you about. July 20th, came out with an article at 10 a.m. on benzinga.com/cannabis/earnings. They're reporting a record quarterly revenue, which for me, this was an important earnings for them because they've had some, I feel like a rough go over the past year because of leadership changes, because of, you know, an abundance of reasons that nobody can foresee. But I think this was a nice rebound. So
revenue continues to grow, which is good. And again, this were preliminary results, but you know, all indicates that revenue continues to grow quarter over quarter. And you know, they are anticipating a pretty meaningful increase in revenue, hoping almost $14 million in the second quarter, which is quite high for Entourage Health.
It's nothing to sleep on for an LP, man. I mean, you have your major LPs, and then you have the LPs that are playing real big catch up, and it seems like WeedMD is taking some steps forward.
A $60 million a year, you know, revenue run rate. It's It's not bad.
Not bad at all. I don't think that can be considered bad. Hey, Bravo Mo 1982, what's up? Bins and bins biddy. CBDMD. You know, Javier, we have a lot of, I feel like, legislative news that you get to cover today, and I'm going to throw it to you to do that. I do want to give one shout out while we have everybody. BZCannabis.com, y'all. BZCannabis.com. This is another website that we have for the cannabis industry. But this is our cannabis event series. We do this two to three times a year. You guys have probably seen it virtually recently, but we are back in person. We'll still stream it on YouTube, in October, every major cannabis company is pretty much going to be participating, from Canopy and Trulieve to I think Curaleaf might be there, Air Wellness. I mean, it's just the list goes on, y'all.
If you're not there, you're square.
I love it. But you can be there in person. Grab a ticket. It's going to be a lot of fun. You'll get to meet us.
Elliot will. Patrick will. Yeah.
I'm not going to pay for a ticket. You know, I'm putting it on. We're going to make you buy a ticket, though, Javi. What is up, y'all? Start rolling up on the cannabis hour. All right, laterally. All right, Javier, throw it to us, man. What is on the docket today?
I mean, today, probably the most interesting piece of news to me revolves around Amazon. Of course, AMZ or ZN on the NASDAQ. A few months ago, or actually last month, they announced that they would adjust their outdated cannabis policy. And now it seems that the company is lobbying in DC and trying to persuade other corporations and Congress to support federal legalization. What is in all of this for the company is yet to be determined.
Goodwill.
It seems like, you know, the bigger players are already betting betting quite strong on cannabis delivery. We saw a similar move from Uber a few months ago that announced that they were also considering joining the industry once it became legal. And again, Uber is UBER on the New York Stock Exchange.
Which I hold my position on that article to this day. It was a whopping nothing burger. I'm sorry, that wasn't even close to an announcement. Anyway, don't go. Go ahead, Javi.
I think that's fair. That's very fair. But, you know, that's interesting. We had some very big IPOs this week. We had Clever Leaf price its IPO at $125 million. And that'll trade on the NASDAQ under CLOEU. CLOEU, that's Clever Leaf Capital Corporation. Not to be confused with Clever Leaves, which is a Colombian operator.
For some reason, I was thinking it was Clover Leaf.
This is Clover Leaf.
Clover Leaf, not Clever Leaves.
Yeah, wow. That's why I made the distinction, because I'm not that good at pronunciation.
I mean, well, you know, guys, just go read his article on it. But I mean, they didn't think that through. And that's not your fault, Javi. Yeah,
Clover Leaf. And then he had Silver Spike Investment Corporation that also priced its IPO at $150 million and applied to list on the NASDAQ under the symbol SSIC.
That's an exciting one, I think.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Silver Spike a lot. Awesome, y'all. So I guess, you know, kind of maybe on the other side of my initial news with WeedMD, we always like to talk about stocks. Let's CBDMD, Benzin, but I've always liked them. I thought they positioned themselves as one of the leaders in the hemp CBD space. They had that partnership with the Olympian, if I'm not. No, that was CBD. That was brands. Was a different company.
CBD does have a bunch of partnerships with athletes.
Like, they have a lot of athletes.
With NASCAR.
Yeah. Well, it's they keep themselves out there. They keep their story out there. They keep their products out there. So I think there's something to be said for that. I don't know. I think you're going to start seeing more of them. I think they're starting to prepare for another push. So maybe it's not something bad to add to your watch list right now to kind of keep an eye on their movements. What do you think about them, Javi? Do you have any specific thoughts about CBDMD?
I mean, not really. I like their strategy. They're extremely mainstream. they're on the New York Stock Exchange, right? In a way, so that I don't know. I think it's an exciting company, right? And they get marketing very, very well.
Brilliant marketers.
Which seems to be particularly important for CBD companies, as there are few ways to differentiate, and everyone will tell you, yeah, it's quality. We differentiate in quality, but that's something that everyone promises, and it's hard.
Everybody says they have the highest quality. You know what, though? Except for Paul Peterson. Go ahead. You finish your comment, but
I mean, I don't know. I just like that they also have this, this deal with Bellator MMA, for like mixed martial arts stuff. So again, they're always getting their brand out there, which.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to. You have to do that in this space, especially if you're going to push the CPG model. Donkey Limit, is just a rumor that MSOS added VRNO yesterday, Verano Holdings. Nice initiation for them, too. I mean, you're talking about just a company that has blazed their own path over the past 6 months. Javier, let us know if that is true or not. But listen, I mean, if they haven't, they're going to. I mean, Verano is awesome. So yes. it would not make sense for them not to.
I mean, I didn't see anything, but I'll have to check the holdings for MS.
I would be shocked if it didn't happen, Donkey Limit. Let's put it that way. A couple of kind of not downers. I don't want to say downers. Maybe just they have room to grow. No pun intended. Neptune Wellness not having the most wonderful year with COVID. But I really liked the direction before when they made that. I think it was like a novelty foods acquisition, company acquisition a while ago. Really trying to push the branded products line. I've always really liked them, and I wanted to use that as kind of a conversation point with you. Seems more extraction companies are moving that direction. Do you feel, Javi, that is because they feel they can't sustain that business model? Do you feel that it's just another part of the business? They felt like they could do it better. I don't know. What's your thought process as to why we're seeing more products come from these formerly just extraction companies?
I mean, I think, in the longer term, it's just retail moves volume as well, right? It's not just wholesale. So it's, some companies want to diversify, right? It's part of this vertical integration model in many cases, right? But I don't think it's something that we'll see prevail over time. Companies can't do everything, or maybe yes, right? Or maybe we see like these conglomerates form. It's not surprising and it's not concerning for the time being.
It takes me back to our conversation last week with Paul Peterson. I think that was actually Patrick and I, but I'm not sure if you were listening, Javi, but they are releasing a new product line. A new oil product line that will hit the shelves, and ideally we'll see probably in beverages eventually. So I think that's super interesting. But what I was going to say is we all talk about these companies want quality or they have the best quality or whatever by this award standard or whatnot. I thought Paul said something hysterical. He said he takes bad dried flour and creates great oil. I was like, you know what? Thanks for admitting that, Paul.
I mean, like, yeah, but that's kind of one of the points, right? You know, it's the extraction process allows for more parts of the plant and lower quality plants to be used, right? And I think that's important, right? It makes the productive process a lot more eco-friendly, right? It makes the productive process a lot more holistic. And not everyone can grow great weed, right? And everyone will promise you they can grow great weed, but.
Yeah, I mean, everybody promises it. Everybody has some sort of measurement that they look at, but at the end of the day, it's gonna be who's in front of more eyes and on more shelves. Maybe that's cookies. Maybe that's GTI. Maybe that's can. We'll see. So that's kind of. Oh, and my other one that was kind of on the same vein as Neptune, which I was surprised at, to be honest, because I felt like they were buzzing for a little bit, especially last year with Sproutly. Sproutly just seems to honestly be hemorrhaging a little bit. I don't know what your thoughts there are, but they reported a fiscal year net loss of over 61.5 million Canadian, calling it a transitional year. That is one hell of a bad transitional year.
I mean, I agree with you, but again, I believe in rebound.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they can't come back and be the best LP out there. It's not. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying, like, at some point, you just got to be like, this is what we did wrong. This is what we're doing next. I don't know. Maybe that's not the way to go for businesses, but yeah, 61.5 million.
I mean, one of the things that to me has been a little bit of a strange red flag in many of these earnings reports is when they don't do very well, like these companies don't do very well, and they blame COVID. And they go like, because of COVID, we had to restructure. And it's like, dudes, we companies were thriving during COVID.
Yeah.
You were an essential business. You cannot blame it on a macro environment.
Well, and for ideas of how to succeed, just look around. Like, look at the e-commerce. Look at the digital activations that maybe you didn't do. Maybe you just didn't do well. I don't know.
I mean, here's a good example, right? Our first guest today is actually running a company that managed to overcome actual COVID duress, right? And we're talking about Planet 13, right? Planet 13 operates a mega store in Vegas, right? And a lot of its sales,
that's putting it nicely,
yeah, a lot of its sales are, you know, depend on or rely on tourism, right? Or so we thought. And they had a few rough months, but as soon as Vegas opened back, they rebounded, and you know, they weren't just dwelling on the past, like, hey, okay, so COVID hit us, so now we have this excuse not to hit our metrics. Pretty much the opposite. They double down and hit their metrics and report on them every month.
I mean, should we hear from Larry himself on this? I mean, if Larry's here, let's bring him over. I mean, I am pumped.
Larry Scheffler is the co-CEO of Planet 13.
How's it going, Larry? How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. It's Thursdays. It's like my Friday. I get to just be chatting with the audience about cannabis stocks. It's exciting, you know? And I can't say enough how much we love PLNHF. And that's the OTC symbol. We have the CSE one up there, but you guys have been leading the way for a while. So before I get too far ahead of myself, though, can you tell us a little bit about Planet 13 from your own words?
Well, it depends. Where do you want me to start? First, we're in the middle of going from 43 cash registers to 85 because we can't keep up with the increase. That'll be done around sometime toward the end of August. We're also adding 2,000 square foot retail centers, doing all of our memorabilia and places for the ladies to shop and sundries and so on. After we open that up, and while we're doing that, another 45 days from now, we're adding another amusement type entertainment value for our customers. We're adding in two robots that actually are behind our Willy Wonka chocolate factory, where you watch the gummy squirt being made and the chocolates and the drinks, and they will unload drinks onto the little cases. Once an hour, one of them gets bored, picks up an empty can and throws at the other robot. They get into a sword fight. The loser pours the winner a real beer. They settle their differences and go back to work. So that's the next entertainment park, along with our expansion. We're putting up an 80-foot digital wall, 20-foot tall, 80-foot wide. Looks like Niagara Falls is coming over the top of it. Along with we call it a Gucci Center for a new entrance turnstile coming into the store. And that will hold a levitating products that people want to rent to show off their product before they come into Planet 13. And that's already sold out. We've already leased all of those to different vendors.
Let me ask you something. And I mean, I'm going to try and avoid cursing here, but like, how the hell do you come up with this stuff?
Gummy squirts. You just take enough gummy squares and it just flows. No, I'm just kidding. We just like to create a Bob and I say that we've been in maybe Vegas too long. We've been here together over 100 years. And they go, how'd you guys come up with it? This is all we know. This is all the casinos do to bring in the people. They create, you know, everybody wants to be entertained. It's our job to entertain them. They don't even know how they want to be entertained. That, again, is our job. We think we're doing a good job on it so far. And that's actually advertises for us. We We want everybody to do as much video and pictures as you want, because what do? They share it with their friends. You got to see this place. And that's why it's expanding so fast.
You know, I love that. And the fact that, you know, the consumers are part of your marketing strategy. That's incredible. And honestly, like the a way to move forward this industry into that thought process is incredible. I do want to touch on what you just said, though. You've been in Vegas forever. You know, the expansion is there. You guys are having to try and keep up with the demand. Are you still focused solely on Vegas? Is that still your, you know?
We want to be in 15 of the largest cities. If it's a tourist area plus the rooftops, if it's big enough for a pro team, we'll be in that store. I mean, in that city. And that's about 15 different cities across the U.S. right now. So we've been traveling coast to coast for about 45 days. My partner and I look at all types of areas to where we want to expand to next. And again, remember, in Orange County, we looked over at 100 sites. We almost gave up in Orange County. It didn't fit all the boxes we feel we need for a superstore until we found the one in Santa Ana. And we're very happy with that one. That's what we're going to do with the other cities. And
Tell us about the opening, a little bit about Santa Ana. I was supposed to be there, and I got stuck. Like, I couldn't take the flight for the opening, which was a crazy event, by the way. You know, so I was pissed I missed it, but like,
you should be.
Travel restriction, you know, health comes first. I'm vaccinated now, so.
Oh, that's good. See you next store. I was gonna put a mask on just talking to you, which I didn't know.
Well, it sounds like it was successful then, the opening.
Yeah, very successful. And it's still a job for us to. I mean, there's 19 million people in the L.A. basin. We got to let us know who we are, just like we did here. It wasn't like this when we opened our door the very first time. And so we're doing door openers and lost leaders. And once the people come into our store, see what we're doing, we know they'll be back. We just have to get them in and educate people in the area. And we're in the middle of doing that now. Continuing. Ongoing process.
I got to tell you, are you excited for the cannabis community to swarm back to Vegas in October?
Absolutely. It's been so long. Absolutely. And then I got to say, after we finish this next expansion, that we'll be starting on the next one after that, and that one will be fully built out, but that we'll end up with about 150 cash registers at that point. But then this building would be built out.
Larry,
the consumption launch.
Would you have us to do a site tour for Cannabis Hour for our audience?
Absolutely.
Show these guys the behind the scenes. I mean, we can't not ask that. So we'll be there. Javier and I will be there as Cannabis Hour representatives at MJ Biz in October. So let's set something up. And guys, if you want to see a site tour of one of, if not the most famous dispensary in the world. No, I mean,
that is the most
famous. Yeah. Yeah, I was like one of. I was like, I don't know who's more famous. It's like, I don't know. It's like I say that and I correct myself right when I said it. Larry, we're going to set that up for these guys. Honestly, I'm super interested in now that Vegas is returning. I mean, is it returning? Can we say that yet? Vegas is returning?
Yes, it is returning. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So now that it is returning, I mean, you're expanding. There's more expansion. You're looking outward. I mean, you seem to be pretty optimistic about what's happening, you know, for your business right now. Is that reflective of your insights for the rest of the industry? Do you feel like we're moving in a positive direction legislatively? I'd love to get your thoughts as one of the leading CEOs in the space.
Well, yes, we're moving in the right direction, but it's still a long, long time for we'll be off the federal level. I think banking or banking rights and so on will be first, then states' rights, then finally the off the federal level. But I see the federal level going off Schedule One is 3 to 5 years from now yet. You know, you hear people talk about it, but you know it's a dead end, just like the one with Schumer just now. It turned into a dud. It's all it is.
Can I ask, you know, we had a huge discussion, Javier, Patrick, and Patrick says hi, by the way. The three of us had a discussion last week, a week ago, on this bill, and none of us thought this was at all going to get legs under it. You know, and for a few reasons, but is there one part of that conversation, it's not a draft and it's not a bill, but is there one part of that that you felt just this is why it's not going to work right now?
I don't think it's any one thing. I think there's too much infighting in political arena right now, period, until we get some of that sorted out. I don't know when that is. I would hope if I don't think it'll be this session with the Biden administration, whoever the next one is, if we get fresh face, I don't care which side, maybe then they can get some people working together and doing the people's work in Washington like they should be. Right now, it's a joke.
Could not have said it better. Doing the people's work, though. Let's make that into a T-shirt.
One of the things I like, you know, it's more of a financial nerd that I am, but, you know, I really like that you report comps and just general stats and results and revenue monthly. Why did you decide to do this, right? It's something that we haven't seen in the cannabis industry and almost in most industries, it's not very usual. Maybe we see like McDonald's report like monthly comps, but it's...
Maybe it's because we haven't been in the public eye before. I've never been involved in a public company. I've been an entrepreneur and we did this for, it would be a lender or a bank or whatever, monthly all the time. We just thought it was natural, just like when we did the superstore. Why'd you guys decide to do it? It seems kind of goofy to us why people didn't think of this before us. It seems so natural. So I guess it's, you know, pretty simplistic, but that's really why we decided to do it. We thought people would want to know. And we'd like to tell everybody what we're doing with the success we've had.
I mean, isn't that all business? I mean, how business succeeds is because the people want it. What consumers want is what sells. I mean, that is good business. Not to belabor the simple point that you just made. So, you know, we read something, gosh, must have been, what do you think, Javi, like 2, 3, 4 months ago from Viridian Capital Advisors and Scott Griper's team over there about Planet 13's dispensary being the most single valuable asset in the industry. Initial thoughts on that statement?
I mean, it's flattering. I don't know. As we keep going here, how's anybody going to catch up? And I don't mean to say that, being a little cocky on it, but it's going to be so large, it's going to be hard. Along with when we're done with the site next to us that we want for the superstore, for the consumption lounge and a club, roughly 20,000 square feet, we'll take over 4.5 more acres, another 55,000 square foot building. We will end up with 19.5 acres on this site with 176,000 square feet of cannabis amusement center, for lack of a better term. So that's our whole goal that we think we'll do. We'll be building for the next 2 years. We've been building for 3 years. It's fun doing it. If we're not doing it, yeah. Bob and I really, it gets kind of boring because we have such a great team. It runs so smooth with the rest of our team. I got to do something new all the time. And that's what keeps us going, is come up with new ideas, new things for the customers, interactive ideas for them to see. And we always got to create more things. They get bored with it. What are you guys going to do next year? What did you do for me tomorrow, right?
I think you mentioned earlier that you're looking at expanding into many other places across the country, not necessarily with superstores, right? Or is this?
Well, 15 of the cities will be superstores, but as we either acquire licenses or buy a smaller MSO, they will come with other smaller stores. So we will have smaller stores that will, if they've got, I'm sure they all have great names, the name will stay there, or be a P13 living marijuana or whatever they want to call it, right? And then we'll call it a Planet 13 neighborhood store. So we're going to call those neighborhood stores that help them get the information about Planet 13 across the country and our brands and so on. But yes, we will have smaller stores also, but only about 12 to 15 superstores is all.
So the reason why I ask this is like, why the superstore strategy, right? Because it seems to be very much embedded into your corporate strategy, the wow factor, the go big or go home kind of approach to retail.
Well, again, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're wrong, but you're right. It's entertainment. It's everybody wants to be entertained. People love going to a really nice area to shop. We think it's a natural. I don't know. It doesn't seem anything special we've come up with. It's just like you go to a nice mall or someplace else, or you want to go a little 2,000 square foot store. I mean, they're all over the place. They're nice, but people like nice areas to go, sit down and relax with their other partner shopping or whatever. They give a drink. They can have something to eat. They're on the list to check in. They get a little note on their iPhone said you're up next. Well, if they're in the middle of a drink, you press a button, you get a 15-minute delay. You can keep doing that without losing your spot in line. It's all these little things we're trying to – how would we want to be treated when we're in a store like this? We just thought it's a natural. I don't know. I need the rooftops. I need the visitors. It's still got to be a tourist town. Mm-hmm. I think Florida could live with three superstores. Miami, Fort St. Pete, and Orlando would be great ones.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Love St. Pete. Absolutely. I mean, what about Times Square?
I mean, that scares me a little bit, you know, but that would be in our list eventually, but they're not recreational also.
Right. As a person who lived in New York for almost a decade, I can tell you I hated going to Times Square, but man, you get the tourists.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, Boston's another good one we're looking at. Chicago, Detroit right now. We'll probably stay out of Denver right now. I think it's a kind of a mature market.
Who do you think your competition is?
You know, people ask us that all the time when they come here. And my answer is, for the superstores, we don't have any. We really don't. We don't have any competition in the superstore right now. So, I mean, knock on wood, that's great. We tried to even talk our neighbor here to open a superstore. We created the Amsterdam of Cannabis. He didn't want to do it. We thought it'd be great for us. So
I guess he doesn't pay attention to your bottom line. Yeah. Larry, so, you know, tell us as we move forward, I mean, the investment opportunity here, you know, compared to we're all pretty realists here. When we look at the analysts of the space, they all love you, but we continue to hear about Curaleaf, GTI, Trulieve, Air Wellness Now, Verano, we're talking about them earlier. You know, so what, you know, in terms of Planet 13 being in that same vein of cannabis stocks that people should consider, what are you doing now to take that step, or what should people pay attention to consider you as a part of that same vein?
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Well, we still think it's a buying opportunity for Planet 13. The good thing about us, we are so fiscally responsible. We treat the money if it's our money, even though it's public money. And so we're sitting with $150 million roughly in the bank. We've got zero debt, which most of the companies don't have. And that's why we're in the buying mode right now. We get calls all the time from our bankers in Canada. Do you need another $100 million? Do you need another $150 million? It's not a problem. It can almost be pre-sold. We don't want to take anymore until we need it. I mean, we get chastised a little bit that we move too slow. We move slow because we treat it like our money. Hopefully, that our investors and, you know, that buy the stock can appreciate that. If we want to criticism for it, I'll take the criticism, but I got to spend it like it's my money.
But that's awesome, and I really appreciate it. I mean, as a retail investor, I know I would. But do you consider debt at all, right? I was of the school of thought that, you know, debt is always bad in general. Like, I would rather not owe anyone anything. But turns out in business, debt can also be a good thing. It really depends on how you know, in what terms you get it and how you execute it, right? But so do you consider debt at a certain point, if, you know, to pursue M&A in the near future, or is it part of your philosophy to stay debt-free?
No, we know that at some point we might have to take on some debt. We're going to do that as a last resort if we needed to buy an MSO or something. Right now, it's working well. At least the people we're talking to, will it take a certain amount of cash? Again, we got $150 million, and they'll take the rest in stock because of our performance and what we've done. If that continues to work that way, of course, that's the best period for our company and for our shareholders. But it's not off the table of taking some debt at some point in time.
Everybody, drop a one in the chat if you just heard Larry casually throw out, if we have to buy an MSO.
Anything's possible.
Oh, Larry, you might be my favorite guest, man. That's hysterical. And please break that news here. Oh my gosh. Break that news with us, Larry. You know, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I mean, the conversation obviously is far from over for Planet 13. Lots of fun things in the works. You gave a great case for the Planet 13 stock, and everybody, oh, Javier is gone. PLNHF is the OTC ticker. PLTH is the CSC ticker. But Larry, any last words you want to leave our audience? A lot of investors, a lot of cannabis professionals listening to it today.
The only thing I could say is, like I said a little bit earlier, I still think it's a buying opportunity for us. Watch us grow. We're just very much structured, and we're going to do it the right way, like we have been. And I'd love to come on your show anytime and talk about the future.
I appreciate that, Larry. We will definitely have you back, my friend. But until then, sir, you be well, stay healthy, and we will see you in Vegas in October, sir.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks again. All right. Wonderful conversation, y'all. May just be me. I don't know. I'm fine to have a conversation with Matt. I'm really excited to hear what he has to say. But y'all, if you enjoy the conversation, drop a one. Check Planet 13 out. They really are legitimate in every way I can say that. Donkey Limit, you said, I like PLTH a lot, but not sure if the sector is mature enough for superstores, supply, et cetera. I think it is right now for him. Now, if everybody was trying to have a superstore, Javi, I don't know what your opinion is on this. Then maybe we could talk about it not being mature enough. But we just, I mean, I don't, who's his competitor, superstore-wise?
No, I mean, honestly, I don't know. I really love the model. I'm being honest here. I do think there's some other stores that can compete in terms of maybe like visibility or recognition, right? Mm-hmm. I think like Cookies or certain dispensaries from MedMen. Or some of the bigger like flagship stores at Harborside, right? They enjoy that kind of recognition. But yeah, no one has that kind of super.
Maybe
store.
Some of the I mean, future.
They call it, you know, the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory of cannabis. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been there, it's kind of true. I mean, it's not overstated. It's a cool place. It's a fun place to me. I mean, me being from Argentina, right? Where it's like nothing is as double bacon and fries and a shake like you get in America. To me, at first, I was like, dude, this is overkill. But then yeah. You go and experience it, and it's fun. And that is the whole point. I was like, dude, this is too much. What is this about? But I thought the same about everything in Vegas until you understand that's what you're there for.
We're going to make this happen. Great. We're going to get a site tour of Willy Wonka and the chocolate weed factory over here. We're going to make it happen.
Weedy Wonka.
Weedy Wonka. There's too many of these.
Dad.
Okay. Yeah. All right. You know what? Best Willy Wonka pun for cannabis gets a t-shirt. Drop it in the chat. Awesome, y'all. Next up.
No dirty stuff.
No dirty. Thank you. We like to be here. British. And not get banned. All right. So, Javier, do we have Matt here? Are we ready to go?
Yes, we do. We have Matt Hawkins of Entourage Effect Capital. He's a chairman of Harborside as well and one of the best investors in space. So, big honor to have him on Benzinga's Cannabis Hour.
Welcome Matt. Back.
Thanks, guys. How are y'all?
Good, man. Just had a – I'm pretty sure Larry just said he's going to buy an MSO. It didn't happen, y'all. Kidding. That was a joke. But it's good to have you back, Matt. I mean, we've had you on in the past. We talked a lot about legalization last time you were on. So maybe some personal developments or developments for Entourage Effect with Harborside. We'll get to that. But tell us what's been up, man. What have you been up to, I would say, at Entourage since you've been on last?
Well, lots happened. we have made... four investments out of our third fund already, which is great. So we're rocking and rolling there. I can't remember when I came on last. I think it was probably maybe around Christmas time. Maybe.
Yeah, it was holidays.
Yeah. So we had just at that point kind of taken over the board at Harborside. We've gone through a whole lot of positive changes. We've kind of checked the box on a bunch of different initiatives that we set up and were very public about when we took over. And we've got about two to three more boxes left to check. And then it's just a matter of, you know, because we've said all along this is going to be a, focus on accretive M&A activity. And we've already done that with one play. We're about to do it with a couple of others. And then it's going to be a integration and, you know, working to make sure it all kind of gels. And at that point, there'll be a different person at the helm than me, which will be good. So,
I mean, can you talk to us a little bit about the why Harborside? You know, there's many companies in the space that could have used you. So I'm curious.
Well, I mean, the main thing is that we're large investors in it. So we have a, you know, we have a fiduciary responsibility to our investors to make sure that, that it works out. And we're just, we're uniquely qualified to be able to bring in the talent, the companies that we, you know, get involved with, you know, from an oversight standpoint, in some cases from a board level standpoint, and in some cases even hands-on operations. So that's just the way we've built our team. It's, you know, our model isn't to operate companies we invest in, but like any private equity company, you know, there are times where you might have to do that. And Harborside was a unique opportunity because not only were we large shareholders, but what we saw was a unbelievably unique opportunity to make Harborside a platform company. We were, it has a chance to be the preeminent single state operator. We are vertically integrated. The recent acquisition of Supplime gave us manufacturing and another well-established, in fact, the number one pre-rolled brand in the state of California in Fuzzies. And so that's now our, you know, under our ownership. And so that's a big thing for us. And the two other acquisitions that we're working on will further integrate us and add more retail. And at that point, you know, we've kind of, you know, baked the cake, as they say.
And guys, just to clarify, HBORF is the ticker here. OTC, HBORF. It's not up there. Aaron, if we could get that up there.
That's an easy one to remember because I think of HBO and then just
RF.
It's not RX, but RF.
The HBO exchange.
Maybe for you, Javi. Maybe for you.
So, you know, looking at, I mean, Harborside, you know, I'm probably much newer to the industry than either of you two, but I think of them as one of the older and more OG companies in the space.
Yeah.
You know, the value there, what kind of value does that bring you as an investor right now?
I think it brings, it cuts both ways. I mean, the reality is that, you know, we've got a significantly undervalued stock price right now based upon our top line and bottom line. And that helps and hurts us. But it helps us because we're selling the vision of what's going to happen, you know, post-closing all of these acquisitions, because there's going to be a significant re-rate that occurs. The kind of the OG, you know, backdrop is just the reality of having been in the business. You know, this company's been in business since, you know, damn near 96. And so the D'Angelo family were, you know, obviously very, very, you know, on the cutting edge to be out in front of this, and God bless them. But by the same token, you know, we, like other cannabis companies, you know, have to accept the 280E taxation that's so onerous. And the DM, we're very public about fighting that. Well, that's not our strategy. Our strategy is to be, okay, what do we owe? We're going to figure out what we owe, and we're going to pay it. And so, and the IRS is, you know, working with us on that, just like they are with other companies. But until it goes away with some type of legislation, it's going to continue to be an albatross around the industry.
Indeed. And I mean, what kind of challenges does it pose in general, right? Because that, as you mentioned, up to very recently, you were kind of fighting 280, and now you've embraced it. How does that change your operations? How does that affect the business? How can other people, you know, prepare to weather the implications of 280? You know, and again, for those viewers who don't know it, this is part of the IRS code that applies to cannabis businesses when it comes to taxation, and it's pretty onerous, to understate it a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it impacts the business. I mean, let's be honest, it's significantly when your effective tax rate is as high as it is because of something like this, plus the you know, California is not exactly the friendliest tax market either. And so, you know, when you're trying to convert a, you know, a chunk of the illicit market, having that type of overhang on top of it makes it difficult. I mean, but believe it or not, somehow the industry is thriving in California and other states where taxation is high. I mean, but so I think, you know, but I've been saying this for a while now, you know, Gavin Newsom, before the pandemic, even admitted that the taxing program for cannabis in California was all backwards. I mean, he recognized the only way to convert a larger share of the illicit market was to reduce the taxation for the ones that have already been legalized. And so, and you're seeing that, you're seeing some, like there was that huge drug bust in LA recently with the illicit marijuana. I mean, so that was a big, yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, that's the state's finally doing something about it. You throw in the, you know, conversion illicit market during the vape crisis, you throw in the conversion during COVID when people didn't want to buy their stuff from the street corner because they didn't, you know, feel safe, but they could go to a social distanced dispensary or do curbside pickup or delivery. I mean, when you think about it, cannabis was one of the first industries that was doing that. And because of the essential business designation early on, we had to figure that out. And so, I mean, a lot of retailers followed our lead, which is pretty damn ironic when you think about it.
So at, you know, you're wearing multiple hats here, but as an investor, I would love your thoughts on, maybe we teach our investors here in this audience a little something, and myself as well, organic versus inorganic growth. So you said you came in with a little focus on M&A for Harborside. So I'm curious, as you look at all the M&A that's happening in the industry right now, how do you differentiate between that's a good acquisition? Say, you know, people were not bullish on Canopy's acquisition of Supreme, but they've been fully bullish on every acquisition Ayr Wellness has made. So I'm just curious, if I'm not saying that you have to talk about those specifically, I'm just saying what makes a good acquisition in this space and what do you look for?
Well, again, to your point, I'm wearing multiple hats here. I'm wearing my Entourage Effect Capital hat. But that's the investments that we make at EEC are obviously 100% different than the, you know, the acquisitions or investments we're making at, you know, Harborside, or for any of our portfolio companies for that matter. So there, it's two different conversations. I would say taking Harborside's strategy right now, I mean, while, you know, we're still growing organically through, you know, pursuing licenses, pursuing one-off dispensaries, things like that. But in order to really, really make that change and do it aggressively, you've got to go out and get, you know, aggressive M&A strategies in place and execute on them. And so that's what we're doing. At EEC, you know, our third fund is more focused on making investments that are a bit later stage. And in order to accomplish that, you know, we need to be finding the deals that we can build scale with in advance of legalization. And that is what's exciting about investing in this climate, or even in this day and age, and this climate, is that valuations are a little bit low. We can talk about the Schumer bill in a second, but that has a lot to do with it. And then we are investing at a time when, during the investment period of this fund I keep referring to, we're going to have some type of federal change, whether it's quasi-legality or full legality. Now, we may not see crossing state lines. We're going to see something. It's just that we've come too far, and, you know, it's becoming even, you know, close to being a bipartisan issue. So it's undeniable at this point.
On Entourage, one more little thing. You know, I know your third flagship fund, and you're focusing on later stage companies. At one point, a few months ago, I'd heard you were focusing on distressed assets. Maybe you're, I mean, is this the case still? Is it part of your
strategy? The reality is this, is that when we first started contemplating our third fund, we thought it might have to have some distressed aspects to it. And then COVID came along, and all of a sudden, the entire industry got a kick in the rear, and it's, you know, for the most part, performing rather well. So Well, it's certainly not going to be the main thrust of our investment thesis, but there will be some opportunities that we see that do have some hair on it, as we like to say. But ultimately,
what's the thesis there, right? What's the investment thesis there? Because it's not right a distressed debt kind of purchase or anything. It's just like how you define it is different. So what's a distressed asset sale, and what are you looking for there?
Well, let's kind of focus on we're making private equity / venture capital investments. And we're usually not buying. And again, this is the EC I'm talking about. We're not buying, majority or control ownership of companies. We still back management teams. And so if they need growth capital to execute on their strategy in order to build that scale, whether it's to use our capital to help acquire something else or to get to that next level in advance of legalization, that's the ultimate goal, all encompassing. Now, there's a sliver of that that has some distressed aspects to it because they are short on cash. They are, they've hit a wall operationally for, whatever reason. And we can negotiate, better terms on that type of a company but we still see the upside. Well, then that's a different story, and that requires more of our time and effort as well. And so that's kind of factored into the risk analysis.
Should we fully transition to the Schumer bill? And just overall, Javi corrects me a lot here. It's not a bill, Elliot. It's just an idea. Bill Schumer. All right. So is that a light at the end of the tunnel for you? It may be further off than many of us want.
I guess it's it's a step, but it was so politically motivated, just the whole damn thing. No matter what side of the aisle you're on, it just shows you the climate we're in right now. It just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Even there were so many more questions than answers with that thing. And the public investors, showed us what they thought of it. They, took a dump all over it effectively. There's nothing there, especially they were vague on additional federal taxes. There wasn't any, no contemplation what that would do to the businesses. I mentioned this, I was talking to Emily Paxia the other day, and it's like, we all want social change and we all want this to be a big part of what happens going forward. But why does it have to be all encompassing? Why do we have to have, Cory Booker's, I think he's kind of retracted a bit, but his like saying things like, I'm not going to back the safe banking bill unless there's a, strong, social justice component to this. Well, why? Why not just do both? I know it's a delicate balance. I know it's a delicate conversation to have, but let's be real here. The only way this business as an industry is going to take a step forward is to take that first step, which is Safe Banking Act. So, why can't politicians do what they're supposed to do, which is negotiate and say, okay, I'm going to vote for this, but then recognize that you got to vote for this, whatever social equity deal we pass after that. And move on, go forward. But the bickering is just so typical of what the type that we see in Washington right now.
Mm-hmm. By the way, a quick shout out to our friends at Marijuana Moment. While you were just discussing this, they posted an article where Chuck Schumer discusses a strategy to get enough votes to pass a legalization bill. And also, by the way, just as a footnote, Cantor Fitzgerald also has its suggestions as to how they believe this could pass. You can check that out on Benzinga.com/cannabis.
Got a thought.
there seems to be, they seem to be working toward consensus. I don't feel particularly confident that it will pass, but I don't know. There seems to be a little bit of confidence building around it.
I don't see it happening.
No.
Not in its current form. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
And there's too many. And quite frankly, I'm not sure it's good for the industry if it passes in its current form. There's just too many variables and there's too many unknowns. And
oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's intentionally kind of not focused on the industry, right? From right. what Cory Booker said, it's, you know, it's not a law for the industry. It's a law for the people, right? We can call it right. that. That's and why we'll probably not pass, sadly.
Right. That's all, like, to my point, though, that's all well and good, but you need it to benefit the industry for it to be good for the people, too. So it's I don't know.
So, I mean, yeah, I think
I'm
think
probably about to get in trouble if I keep going further on this.
No, this is fine. Honestly, I think we have a solid kind of understanding there of your thoughts. And I mean, I think they're pretty along in line of where we think as well. Yeah. I'd love to get your thoughts on the rest of the year, though. I mean, cannabis industry has seen some crazy waves this year. Obviously, you know, the February just craze of everything and then the setback to reality. What do you see the rest of the year financially? I mean, do you see this industry continuing to gain momentum, states like Michigan and Illinois to continue to set records?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that a lot of the backtracking of the public markets was, you know, there was no real reason for it. You know, we're still, you know, the only problem is that some of these companies are going up against numbers. Well, they're all going against numbers from that were, you know, early in the pandemic that were, you know, people were stockpiling and it was a, you know, a different time. But as things have become more normalized across the board, you start seeing all these other states coming online and things are only going to improve and get better. I mean, this isn't going away. And so I remain very bullish. I think that stocks, you know, at least on the public side are undervalued for the most part. You know, I talk about the re-rate, you know, at Harborside if we continue what we're doing, but then there's also a re-rate when things change at the federal level. So there's all kinds of different opportunities here, both for public and private opportunities. And maybe there's even a bigger bump, you know, with the private deals that we look at, because there's a multiple step there.
Definitely. Are you open? We have maybe like two more minutes. Are you open to talking some stocks? And of course, you know, I would probably focus on the ones you're invested in since from Entourage Effect Capital. I know you have positions in TerrAscend.
They all suck.
Green Thumb Industry, which you exited. You had something on Acreage. Actually, you invested in High Street Capital when that was a name.
Right.
Would you be willing to talk a little bit about some of the stocks you're bullish on?
Well, what I'll do is I'll tell you, you know, we've sold companies to Curaleaf, we've sold companies to GTI. We were investors in GTI before they were public. We were involved in the kind of the off market, pipe transaction with TerrAscend. We made a, you know, big multiple on that and still have warrants there. And so, those are, and we even made money on Acreage. And so, you know, Acreage still has the opportunity to potentially be, you know, a big windfall even further if the Canopy transaction goes through. But those are all companies that, I mean, the large MSOs are not going anywhere. And they're only going to be able to be further well capitalized upon, you know, being able to be to uplist to the NASDAQ New York Stock Exchange. And so that's going to be a lift to all public companies. And Harborside is no different, by the way. I mean, if we get to be a tier two single state operator, but then from a top line standpoint, could be as large as some of the tier one MSOs. We're going to recognize and reap from that benefit as well too.
I love that. So, I mean, Matt, we'll have you on again soon, man. But I mean, a lot of good updates, a lot of good insights about the Schumer bill, about legislation, about Harborside. I'm super excited for Harborside personally. I mean, I think you guys have done a phenomenal job at leading this company through some tough times. So any last thoughts for our investors, you know, what to watch for, what to look for? I think we've covered a lot of it, but anything else you'd like to add?
I think this was great. I love these, but I can't wait to see everybody in Vegas and it's going to be a big party, but we're also going to do some good stuff and get together and
New York City first, New York City first. That's Benzinga right. Cannabis Capital Conference week before.
Right.
Don't forget about that one, Matt.
That's right. You're right. That's exactly right. And that's exactly right. So I'll be there. And so I can't wait.
Wonderful.
It's a full tour. You got to do New York. You got to do Vegas. You know, it's
we'll all week. Be doing the tour together. We'll see you on the plane.
And talking about a whole week and Entourage Effect portfolio companies, here's something you'll like. Next Tuesday, our guest is Tom Adams of BDSA, formerly BDS Analytics, which I know you also supported very early on, right?
Killer company.
Awesome.
All in the family.
Matt, thanks again for being here, man. Really appreciate your time, as always.
Y'all have a great day, great weekend. We'll see you soon. Be good.
You too, sir. Awesome. I mean, we hit the Vegas market in this. We hit Larry Scheffler buying an MSO. We hit Matt Hawkins kind of echoing what you, Patrick, and I talked about last week. I think you took a more optimistic tone with him, maybe just to play devil's advocate. You weren't that optimistic last week, Javi.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic on it passing, but I did have to shout out like the news that was out there and just, you know, present both sides. Like some people are confident this can pass in some modified form.
None of us have a crystal ball. Matt doesn't even have a crystal ball, and the man has been studying this industry relentlessly for, gosh, like years. But this bill is not set up for backing. You know, not like no major company is going to benefit from this or get behind it. And that's what I was actually trying to say on Thursday, is I don't think what is happening in this bill truly is something that the MSOs are ready for. And that's what I was trying to say on Thursday. Yeah. Ready for, or they want to be ready for, one or the other.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, killer show. Awesome interviews. Two leaders in this industry in totally different ways. I mean, both in retail and dispensaries, but past that, I hope you guys benefited. We'll be back Tuesday, Javi. Hey,
Tom Adam, BDSA.
Yeah. And also, you recorded a show yesterday. When's that dropping? And do you want to say who with?
I don't know. Maybe. So we had Colin Hanks. I can't say anything else. That'll probably air on Wednesday or Thursday. So stay tuned. We'll make sure to let you know on social.
Awesome, y'all. Hey, guys, thank you so much for watching us. Donkey Limit, AJ, Rondre Lanoub, Sunday, Tom White. Appreciate all of you supporting us. We're here Tuesday at 4:30 to 5 Eastern. Thursdays 4 to 5 Eastern. Let us know who you want to see. We'll always be open to hearing suggestions. Cannabis Hour, Benzinga.com. Subscribe.
Yep. Everything.
And feedback always welcome, but hope you enjoyed the show. Javi, my amazingly knowledgeable and fearless co-host, have a wonderful rest of your week.
You too.
The Javi.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Switching and saving with GEICO is easy, so you're free to ponder life's big questions. Like if a person can get discombobulated, does that mean the rest of the time they're just like, combobulated? Are we humans always in a state of combobulation? Until, of course, something dramatic happens and we are discombobulated for a while. Then we go back to being combobulated. Yeah, that's probably how that works. Switch and save with GEICO. It's easier than you think.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.